This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning, folks. I'm Tan Chung Han, and with me in the studio is Joyce Goh. Good morning, Joyce.
Good morning, Han.
Had a lovely weekend.
Indeed, but too short. How was yours?
Always the case, you know, too short a weekend. But hey, not this coming weekend, but the weekend after that, we'll have a three-day weekend.
Oh,
so
very nice.
Certainly looking forward to that. Also, for those of you keeping score, we are just a few weeks away from Christmas, you know. So I'm looking at 5 Mondays from now, it'll be Christmas. So mark those calendars, folks. All right. Also, just wanted to let you know, yesterday was Women's Entrepreneurship Day, and since we did not have a show yesterday because the Morning Run crew, we need our weekends as well. So to make up for it, I guess later this morning on the Breakfast Grill that comes on after the 8 a.m. news bulletin, Joyce, you'll be speaking to Vivi Yusof, co-founder of Fashion Valet and the Duck Group.
Yeah, so she's made a name for herself as one of the pioneer entrepreneurs in the Malaysian e-commerce scene. You can see they started off Fashion Valet, and also they have the Duck Group. So basically talking to her about that, her journey as an entrepreneur, and the future of, you know, her homegrown ventures. What is the future there, as well as the evolving e-commerce landscape in Malaysia?
Okay, so that's in keeping with the Women Entrepreneurship Day that was actually yesterday. Also, just a quick look at the headlines here. What happened while you were asleep? Real quick, Robert Mugabe has unexpectedly vowed to stay on as the president of Zimbabwe. Now, he'll be expected to stay on. Well, he claims he wants to stay on for several weeks. Whether or not the Zimbabwean army lets him do so, that remains to be seen. Also, over the weekend, we learned that Def Jam recordings mogul Russell Simmons has faced new allegations of sexual misconduct. Apparently, these allegations involved his then music video director protege, Brett Ratner, as well. Still in entertainment, over the weekend, sad news, Malcolm Young, who is the guitarist and co-founder of AC/DC, he passed away at the age of 64. So I believe we'll be hearing an AC/DC track later this hour, so make sure you stay tuned for that. A quick look ahead to today, though. Today is Universal Children's Day. So Children's Day was established back in 1954 by the UN, celebrated on November 20th each year to promote international togetherness and awareness among children worldwide.
Hey, Han, we're going to get some children in the studio today, right? Because of that? Are we celebrating that?
I believe so. You know, so that special guest appearance will be happening after the 9 a.m. news bulletin. So you're in for a special treat, so you can, you know, make sure you stay tuned via the BFM app. Or if you're driving around then, you know, be sure to tune into 89.9. Coming up in just a bit, and speaking about Children's Day, we'll discuss, you know, whether or not kids should be encouraged to work out. Now, Joyce, I know you've got 2 kids, mm-hmm. So I'll be looking forward to what you have to say about that. That's coming
Bring
up right
on.
Here. Nice. On BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, signed, sealed, and delivered by Stevie Wonder. Great track to wake us up on this lovely Monday morning, November 20th. I'm Tan Chung Han, and with me is Joyce Goh. You are tuned in to the Morning Run. Folks, it is Universal Children's Day, and we're celebrating that all day long right here on BFM. So to kick things off, let's consider this question here. Should you encourage your kids to work out? Now, I believe, Joyce, you are well-placed to comment on this matter because you've got 2 little offsprings there. So, I mean, right off the bat, should you encourage your kids to work out?
Well, I believe physical activity is important for kids. I mean, even for us adults, right? That's important. But actual working out, it depends. Like at the gym, are you talking about at the gym or what kind of exercise?
Yeah,
right?
So we are speaking about this because there's an article on the Telegraph that speaks about how, you know, given that kids nowadays lack those physical activities, you know, they're always cooped up indoors, perhaps it's an outlet, they could be encouraged to take up, you know, some working out routines at the gym.
So. Yeah, I think that could be positive for kids as well. I have 2 boys. So, no, boys, they need their physical activity.
That's
even
right.
Like when I have my downtime with them, like after work, right? And I just want to chill. I hope they can sit down and just color a bit. And they'll be like, no, mommy, come and play ball. Or come, let's play catching. You know, to them, it's the physical activity. I think that's good. The playground's good as well for them to go and meet other kids.
Okay.
And also, you know, interact with kids, and it's good physically for them. You can see the difference when they go out and they have actual, like, just physical activity in general. You can see that they enjoy it.
Yeah. But let's take one step back here, okay? What are some of the fears or the major concerns you have, you know, when letting kids out and about and kind of letting them be kids nowadays? You know, as opposed to Joyce, our generation, during our time, you know, we'll be out and about, at least for me, I don't know about you guys in Penang, but I'll be out,
out,
you know,
and about.
Yeah, you know, on the bikes and cycling.
That's right,
up to
cycling,
mischief.
Correct.
So those days, they are long gone, right?
I remember cycling at the lorongs and all that, you know, going to see my friends at in the neighborhood, but it's another...
Hang out at the lorongs, huh?
No.
So high class.
They live in an another street, so they cycle together to each other's houses. And yeah, you're right. At the time, it was safe.
But can we ever go back to those days, though? I mean, okay, the caveat here is obviously that I do not have kids.
Well, hopefully we can, but of course the reality is it depends on the parent and where you're going to bring the kids to. Of course, if you bring the kids to a public playground, you'll be there. You're not going to leave the kid alone and play by themselves, all right? Security, of course, is a big issue with parents.
Mm.
But at the end of the day, physical activity, as we were talking about, I believe that's good for kids.
But you also spoke about, you know, having or giving your kids the opportunity to interact with others. But now you've got so many more activities. You know, you don't just have school. You've got after school activities,
yeah,
you know, play groups and
we
all that.
Have play dates. Right. Yeah, we do
so
that.
So doesn't that compensate for the traditional playground, so to speak? You know, because back then you're just kind of limited to knowing the kids on your block, right?
That's
but now you've got social media, etc., play dates. So, you know, doesn't that make up for it?
Yeah, the play dates, you do meet other kids, but it's not physical. Sometimes they come over to the house and then they play toys, whatever toys that they have at home with their friends, but they're not out running.
Right.
You know, yeah. But my eldest son, he's 5, right? So he goes to school and they have this football thing, little kickers.
Right.
So I find that he enjoys that because he gets to go play out football with his friends and it's like a team sport. So I feel kids enjoy that as well. So it really depends on the parents.
All right. And just to complete this discussion here, going back to this article by The Telegraph, because they cite like David Beckham's son, right? 12 years old, you know, he's starting to do bench presses. There's another mother of two that's cited in this article, Hayley Sinclair, who goes to the gym with her 10-year-old son. And even as a personal trainer for that. I mean, should they be allowed to be kids as opposed to having this regimen, you know, this workout routine?
Well, Penang, I'm not going to pay for a personal trainer for my kids. I don't even have a personal trainer.
I know, tell me about
but
it.
But yeah, but physical, I mean, you don't need to go to the gym to have physical activity. You can go around, go outside and play at a playground or go run around the house with your friends, play badminton, you know?
See, but the difference back then, you're allowed to do all those without parental supervision, right? Just let them be kids. Mm-hmm. But now, them doing those activities requires your involvement and your supervision as well. Are you in a place to, you know, give up your precious time to follow your kids around?
Well, I'm a bit of helicopter mom when it comes to taking them out, and my kids are still young.
Plenty.
Of course, if they're older, perhaps maybe you can let go a bit more. Yeah, but not when they're 5 and 2.
Well, plenty of honesty right here on the Morning Run. So coming up in just a bit, we'll be speaking about, you know, how technology continues to invade our lives and whether or not we are increasingly dependent on the likes of Siri, given that, you know, we are so, you know, used to our mobile devices, and, you know, whether that is a slippery slope. That's coming up right here on the Morning Run on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Beck with Think I'm in Love. You are tuned into the Morning Run. I am Tan Chung Han, and with me is Joyce Goh. And today is Universal Children's Day. And in keeping with that theme, just a few minutes ago, Joyce, you and I, we spoke about whether or not kids should be encouraged to go to the gym. Let's now talk about other kid-friendly hobbies for the modern-day child. You've got Gareth Evans of BBC News, who wrote about how he bought a drag racer for his child, and she's 6 years old. Is that a kid-friendly hobby? Because, okay, if you're not familiar with drag racing, it's where two people get into these really, really, really fast vehicles and they just go down this sprint down a straight line and see who crosses the line first, right? And speeds can, you know, go up to like 85 kilometers per hour or higher. Is that kid-friendly?
Well, to me, I I personally found it surprising that he got this for her on her sixth birthday. I personally don't think it's kid-friendly, but obviously he thinks it is. If we read the article, it goes on to say that he believes like they learn teamwork, how to win and how to lose for this drag racing thing. But I'm thinking other games don't have.
Right,
you know, like other games, can't you learn teamwork, how to win and how to lose from other group games like football? Or maybe even like tennis, where you play a doubles game.
Right.
It's
and you can learn
like teamwork as well.
Yeah,
right?
Sportsmanship mm-hmm. as well. Mm-hmm. Just a real quick clarification on the numbers here. Apparently, the top speed for these junior races can go up to 135 kilometers per hour.
Yeah, that's crazy, right? For kids. And she's only six.
Wow. Yeah, so once again, balancing out the risks, you know, versus the possible benefits from this, from such a perceived dangerous sport, you know, because like you mentioned, you can easily foster those same virtues, be teamwork, you know, how to compete nobly, etc., you know, in other sports as well. Now, the reason we're talking about this is also because this follows a very, very unfortunate death of an 8-year-old drag racer, Anita Board, who was traveling at 85 kilometers per hour, that's where I got the number, during her solo sprint in Perth. And her dad actually had a really remarkable reaction whereby the sport has apparently come under pressure and there's talk of a ban. And he says he's really disappointed in it. So he says that the sport should go on for kids despite the death of his daughter. So is this misplaced idealism here? You know, should kids be exposed to those kind of risks, you know, even though the parents say it's okay?
Yeah, the minimum age, according to the article, is 8. So that's when she just turned 8. So that's the minimal age required to race under official rules there. And driving a 210cc dragster. That's what they call the car, a dragster, right? Mm-hmm. And it's amazing how they have a track for that.
Yeah.
Like actual track there for kids to go and do drag racing.
So for you, it's an absolute no-go.
Yeah, for me, it's no-go.
Okay,
sorry.
But then...
But maybe when the kids are older, but not when they're 6.
Right.
Yeah.
But on the flip side, doesn't any... you know, physical activity or anything that offers you that adrenaline rush, you know, doesn't it come with some inherent risks? You know, even playing football, you can break a leg.
Yeah.
Go-karts, you know, you can get accidents there as
true,
well.
True.
So
there are risks.
Where do you draw the line?
Yeah, but for me, racing at how fast again? 135 kilometers an hour is a bit dangerous. I mean, even for us on the road at the highway, it's capped at 110,
yeah.
Right? And these are kids that we're talking about, right? I think I feel it's a dangerous sport. And you know, the kids can go play football or whatever, or badminton, you know. I mean, that's also a team sport. But then again, like Han, you said, you're saying adrenaline rush,
yeah.
Whether they get that. They could get that from scoring a goal.
Well, but it's not the same though. Come on. I mean, it's scoring a goal versus traveling at 135 kilometers per
yeah,
hour.
Yeah, but it's too dangerous to for me even. Yeah,
yeah
for me.
Dangerous.
But who knows? Other people might think otherwise.
Well,
what do you think?
Well, I mean, I'm no parent here. I would think that this is certainly very unconventional. And
but if you have a kid, would you allow your kid to go drag racing?
I'd have to think twice.
See?
But I would think twice mainly because of the potential social backlash from other parents. And like, how can you let your kids...
You know, Han, when you become a parent, there'll be a lot of you have to do this lah. You have to, you know, so you have to tune out a bit.
Yeah,
you
so
know,
it's not just me parenting my child.
Yeah, there'll be a lot of people telling you, but of course, your own parents or your in-laws, you take that into consideration.
Right.
But everyone else will have a comment. So don't you do what's right for yourself and your
right.
kid.
Well, to be fair to perhaps any drag racers out there, I'm not familiar with the sport. No? Well, you know, according to that father of that 8-year-old who passed away, and also Gareth Evans who wrote in the BBC, you know, they are quite secure in the sport because it is under some pretty intense regulation. Obviously not strong enough to prevent the death of that 8-year-old girl. Very tragic there, but obviously this discussion continues right here on the Morning Run. Coming up, we have got The Summer of 69 by Bryan Adams, speaking about harkening back to the good old days. And after that, we'll have the 6:30 news right here on BFM 89.9. Highway to Hell by AC/DC right here on BFM 89.9. I'm Tan Chung Han, and with me Joyce Goh as we celebrate the life and the work of Malcolm Young, guitarist and co-founder of AC/DC, who passed away over the weekend at the age of 64. Joyce, are we on a highway to hell when we reveal too much to our virtual assistants. I'm talking about Siri, you know, Bixby and the like, right? Because now many more people are now turning to these devices or these virtual assistants for life advice, you know. In fact, Amazon recently said that a lot of their searches, center around non-operational tasks. They are more entertainment and advice related. So will tech become our agony aunt?
Well, tech has certainly been taking over a lot of things, I think, for us as we turn to tech for, you know, as it helps us with convenience and all that. I think a number of people do turn to their Siris and their Alexas for things aside from what virtual assistants do. Like, you know, can you please write down
set
the grocery
a reminder,
list?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Set the alarm. Some people do turn to them and seek for life advice. And interestingly, Han, do you know that actually Google has a full personality team in the US composed of like comedy writers, video game designers, and even empathy experts who are actually in charge of defining answers to complicated questions asked of Google Assistant.
Right. So then what happens to human interaction then? Because, okay, we can split it into two parts, right? On one part, there's there's a diary aspect, right? With these virtual assistants, they can chronologically, you know, keep a record of what you've done, what you've asked, what your lifestyle is like, okay? But the difference is, with a diary, it was personal and almost sacred.
Correct.
But now you're actually ceding that information to an army of, like you said, comedy writers and empathy, whatever it was, and a psychologist.
Experts.
Experts, right? Yeah. And what are they going to do with that information?
Yeah, that's true. Like you say, it's information, but it's not just your feelings and all that. But we share so much already with tech.
So isn't that a slippery slope then? No? Is this a good idea, or should we keep things private and really view Siri and Bixby and Echo for what they are, their assistants, but by no means are they supposed to be this agony aunt, so to speak?
Well, there's that view. There's also another view where because people are lonely. And you know, as people get lonely, and with social media, do you find the interaction, the actual physical interaction is less, with social media? So people turn to tech. Mm. So rather than they're just posting out, oh, what I did today, but, you know, how do I feel today? But it's a different kind of feeling when you meet up with friends and actually talk to them. There's that whole, so I feel technology has changed that. And many people in a tech field world, some people are even lonelier than they were
but it seems like, you know, this could risk becoming a crutch for, you know, all of mankind, and it could even define human interaction here. Is this a path we want to go down to? You know, I'm thinking of, you know, the latest Blade Runner movie, Blade Runner 2049. They had that personal or partner romantic involvement kind of thing. Her name's Joy, but she's not even a real physical thing. She's just a hologram of sorts. You think of that 2013 movie with Joaquin Phoenix, her, you know, same thing, right? So is this the future of human interaction?
It shows that the reality is here. It's happening, right? Like Amazon also say they've trained Alexa to answer in a compassionate, helpful way. So it seems to be here already.
Yeah, that's depressing. Thanks a lot, Joyce. Appreciate that. All right, it's 6:44 right now on this Monday, November 20th. We'll be back with more right here on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Something So Strong by Crowded House. You are listening to The Morning Run. Not so crowded in the studio right now, just Tan Jung Han and Joyce Goh and our good old producer, Shazana Mukhtar, here in the studio, keeping you company on this lovely Monday morning, November 20th. I say lovely because this next topic could risk adding to your Monday blues. Let's talk about how the poor health among Malaysians are on the rise due to work stress. So according to the AIA Vitality Survey, more than half of the 5,369 Malaysian employees who were surveyed were found to be at risk of mental health issues. Does that really come as a surprise to you, Joyce?
No, not really.
Oh,
really,
that's
depends.
Terrible.
I mean, the survey also found that at least some 53% of Malaysian employees reported at least one dimension of work-related stress. Mm. And it's because high work stress and, you know, you don't exercise that much, that has contributed to about 84% of employees reporting at least one type of musculoskeletal disorder.
Right.
Is that what? Yeah. And as a result of that, you can see employees, their health, it's not as great. And that found by the survey says that, you know, major loss in organization productivity.
Okay. Now, Joyce, have you worked overseas before?
No. Okay. No, I've worked all in Malaysia, studied, graduated overseas and came back.
Truly Malaysian. You.
Yes.
Okay, now, I've worked in several other countries, okay, the States, Australia, New Zealand, Singapore, etc. And, okay, I think we can safely assume, at least for this discussion, that universally, right, we just don't like work and it causes us stress, right? But it seems that Malaysians seem to be exposed to a disproportionate amount of the negative side effects. I mean, that's the impression I get. Because recently there was another survey, right, Joyce, if you remember this, I think last week, where they spoke about how Malaysians work longer hours, but are far less productive, which makes me wonder, is it the nature of the work, or is it the work culture, or how we are socialized to view work? You know, are we just plain old workaholics? What is it, though?
But from your experience, working in all these markets, which was the best?
Well, Australia was really, really lax. You know, come like 3 p.m. on a Friday, man, like they'll just empty out the letter card and just fill it with certain beverages and chips and whatnot. And it's just like a party from Friday afternoon all the way into the evening. And then they go from the workplace off to another place to continue the night away. You know, so you've got a very, very different approach when it comes to work as well. And they're really, really particular with their hours as well.
Yeah, work culture, right? So coming back to this survey, Malaysia works an average of 15 hours more than their contracted hours each week. That's a lot. 15, 15 hours, surpassing Singapore, Hong Kong, and Australia. So can you imagine, even Singapore and Hong Kong, we're working more hours than Singapore and Hong Kong. And that's supposed to be the kiasu countries, right?
But then here we are, you know, having to endure mental stress, and our mental health and our physical health is on a decline because of this. Now, you spent a few years as an auditor, right? Mm-hmm. Or as a tax person.
Yes.
And I remember you telling a story.
Nearly
and I don't
5
mind,
years, actually.
I don't mind you sharing this.
Which one?
Well, the one where how you were chastised during your early weeks too early, too early was, you know, part of your stipulated work hours,
right? Yeah, I just started work and every time, because you know when you're new and this is my first job, right? And whatever that's been given to me, that time first just faxing stuff and all that, you know, that time
and look at how far you've come.
Yeah. You're faxing stuff. And after that, by 5:30, I thought, okay, well, I can go already, right?
Because in a contract, it says 5:30, right?
And I had nothing more to do. I finished my work. So after like a couple of weeks after that, like 2 weeks in, then my team leader, that's what they call it, I said, Joyce, I'd like to have a chat with you. I was like, oh, okay. She's like, this is for your own good. I'm just telling you that, you know, after a certain hour, like 7 o'clock, the partner does her rounds around the floor. And she likes to see who stays back. And I'm just telling you as an advice that, you know, perhaps you shouldn't go back this early. And I was shocked.
That
I was like,
terrible.
Oh, so sorry, I didn't know. But I told her, that's because I finished my work already. Is there anything else that you'd like me to do?
Right.
And she said, okay, we'll give you more things. But that's the thing, you see. Sometimes when you're... but I'm new at that time. But even when you're not new and you're seniority and you're doing your work productively, the more productive you are, do you find sometimes the bosses give you more work?
Exactly, right? So it becomes this double-edged sword.
Is that the case in foreign countries? Or is it a Malaysia thing?
Well, I mean, from my experiences, I can't speak about that as a whole. But yeah, you know, that seems to be the case. But, you know, just boiling it back down to the Malaysian context here, you know, it's terrible where despite it being stated in a contract, black and white, that these are your work hours and trying to maximize and use your work hours more efficiently. No, instead, you should adhere to the unwritten rules and stay back till late. You and I both know, we've got many friends in the auditing world. Mm-hmm. When it comes to the big four, come peak season, going back at 2, 3 a.m., taking a shower, then coming back into office at 8 a.m., that's the norm. It's crazy.
And working every weekend.
Right. And then, you know, this obviously comes at a cost. So, you know, is it imperative on the employees to start making noise to really, you know, protect ourselves, or is it incumbent on the companies to really buck this trend? Who do you think should shoulder the responsibility?
Yeah, is it a work culture? Is it an industry culture?
Or
is it a country working culture,
right? Or is it a society thing? Do we all need to come together and say, hey, we need to preserve ourselves. Work is work. You know, we need to take time off and talk to Siri or something. It's coming up to the 7 a.m. news. Stay tuned right here to BFM 89.9. It's 7:07 on this lovely Monday morning, November 20th. You are tuned in to the Morning Run right here on BFM 89.9. And we are celebrating Universal Children's Day, hence the kids' voices on the news bulletins. And we'll be also featuring some kids' voices here on the Morning Run. They'll happen after the 9 a.m. News bulletin. So folks, if you are hearing that, okay, it is not meant as satire. At least that's according to one listener who stepped in. This is all part of our programming for Universal Children's Day. Now, speaking of, we have a poll here whereby 3 out of 5 Malaysian children have urged adult leaders to eradicate racism, discrimination, as well as gender-based violence. So, you know, this is something that was done recently, isn't that right, Joyce?
Yeah, hun, this is quite interesting. So the survey was done with over 1,000 local children by the United Nations Children's Fund released last week. And the issues ranked among the top most pressing concerns are ensuring quality education, ending all violence, ending poverty, and ending world hunger. And it's interesting, you see, for most girls, votes were mainly went to issues such as quality of education for every child, including children with disabilities, refugees, and migrant children. Whereas for boys, most issues that received votes on were for ending poverty and world hunger, and ending all forms of violence against children, including bullying and corporal punishment.
Well, these kids are so in tune nowadays. Mm. When I was a kid, I think the only thing I worried about was, you know, whether I could win the lucky draw with the Ting Ting ice cream fillers, you know, like that's all I cared about. Good God.
Yeah, but now maybe with technology and all that, they are more aware of issues. And yeah, perhaps these are things that are obviously on their minds, like bullying. I think that's a very real subject for kids. Yeah.
But in a way, you know, it's kind of sad if you think about the innocence of children and being able to, you know, let them foster and just enjoy their, you know, these early childhood years and retain that sense of innocence, right? But now they're having to contend with, like you said, the rise of bullying and even thinking about macro global issues like racism and inequality and discrimination, etc., right? You know, what does that tell us about the world that we live in right now and the world that we're handing off to our kids, right? Now, for more insights into this, we spoke to Lo Ngai Yuan, who is the president of Kaki Seni, an arts group that helped to conduct this survey right here in Malaysia. So we asked if she was surprised by the results of the survey, and in the work that Kaki Seni does with kids, was she able to see that awareness on social issues come through?
So in our work with the children, we talk a lot about using the arts as a tool, as an access, and then getting the children to then be free enough to talk about the issues that they want to stand for. And those are mostly conversational, and it is usually driven in a group. So that will have a huge difference in the results when you are asking a singular child what they think, and you get to choose from a list of many and narrow it down to 8 issues that you feel very close to, you see. So the biggest surprise for me was the difference in boys and girls' point of view. Like, the girls were a lot more concerned about parity, whereas the boys were more concerned about global issues like healthcare, food security, safety. That was really interesting.
We then asked her about the distinct differences in the issues that boys and girls cared about from such a young age and what she thought about it.
If you really think about it, then you kind of understand that it's also how the children are raised and the kind of exposure that they would have had. Men generally, they're not as aware of, say, violence against women compared to women who understood the issue pretty well. So I think we knew this as activists and as people who run a lot of on-ground workshops. We know what is more relevant to specific stakeholders. But it's still surprising that when children said it and when children mirror that truth, then you're beginning to think that, hey, the way we're educating our children, is that lopsided as well? So that's the question that we're asking. Are we educating girls to be more aware and to take more action when it comes to parity? But when we talk to boys, we are talking more about the rights for education. Is there a difference in what we're telling the children? So that was the question we're asking.
Finally, we ask her about the role of parents in all of this.
I think parents today have it slightly easier. You just need to YouTube whatever and it comes out. And there's obviously pro and cons about this, right? So the pro is that it helps you in your explanation, and then all you need to do is just have a conversation around it and making sure that your point of view is not encroaching their freedom to express what they think. But the cons is clearly that you take it for granted that whatever they ask, it will be taught by YouTube anyway. So you are less likely to consider what are the ways to teach them yourself, to pass on life principle, for example, and not something that you are talking at them about actually helps a lot. So, for example, a lot of parents that I meet, whenever I mention Rick and Morty, they get mortified. No pun intended, but they get mortified. Like, oh, yeah, that's not good for children. I'm like, yeah, but try watch it together and then have a conversation around it. That's really going to change a lot of things. They really put really difficult stuff out there. Because how else are you going to find opportunities to have difficult conversations, right? You're not going to, out of the blue when they wake up, hey, guess what? We're going to talk about queer dressing. You're not. And again, please, it's really about a conversation. You really need the children to have their point of view and their opinion. You need to give them facts. And if you don't know it, Google it. It's really simple. Find the answer together and don't have to feel the need that you have all the answers to everything.
And that was Lo Ngai Yuen, president of Kakisani, an arts group that helped to conduct this survey in Malaysia, whereby 3 out of 5 Malaysian children have urged adult leaders to eradicate racism, discrimination, and other global issues that faces today's society, right? So going back to this point that Ngai Yuen made about having those difficult discussions with children. And, you know, she speaks about how maybe parents have it easier this day and age.
Yeah, I don't.
Okay, you're making a face right now.
Well, I personally don't think parents have it easier today. I mean, because of YouTube, as she said, yeah, there are pros and cons to YouTube. I agree. I mean, because of YouTube, because of the internet and technology, it's parenting is, in a way, harder. Because and the things that
they're exposed
that
to so much
are,
more.
Yeah, right? And you need to limit them to how long they are using the tech. You don't want them to, I mean, it depends on the parent, but then again, I personally don't think parents have it easier today.
Right.
It's just a different kind of landscape when it comes to parenting already, right?
Yeah.
And the kind of things, the people that, I mean, bullying, of course, it happens back then and now as well. But it's very different. And I agree with what she says about the conversations you have to have. Also, but it depends on how old are the kids.
Mm.
You know, the conversations you have with the kids at what age? What topic at what age? You know, when is it appropriate to talk to them about different topics? Like she said, queer dressing and all that. There's an age group for it, I guess.
Right, but the idea of, you know, some things being age appropriate, you know, that seems to hold less water now, right? Because what was age appropriate for us when we were growing up is, you know, certainly the norm for a much, much younger age group now, right? Because they're exposed to so much more. So the idea of, you know, parenting being a protective role rather than a facilitator of discussions, do we have to start making that shift? I guess I'm trying to get advice for, you know, if I become a parent soon.
Considering it, but down the pipeline,
yeah,
is it?
So it's no longer about sheltering or protecting. It's more about encouraging, you know, like lifting them up and setting the right context.
You should encourage the kids, but at the same time, given with technology and YouTube and all that, I feel there should be a limit as well to how much you expose them to it, at what age.
Okay, always a balance there. We are celebrating Universal Children's Day right here on the Morning Run. In just a bit, we'll take a look at the front pages of the local papers who are also keeping with that theme. Stay tuned right here to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.